wanna make a change for once in my life.
Welcome to Make the Change, your weekly dose of inspiration for creating positive change in your life. Learn how changing your thoughts, feelings, words, and actions can lead to the life you desire and deserve. No need to go it alone. Let us become part of your journey to get from where you are to where you want to be. Every Saturday at noon, the show's host, Patricia Terrell, and her fabulous guests will lead you with a weekly prescription to invigorate your mind, body, and soul. Wait not a minute more. It's time to get started with Make the Change.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Make the Change Radio Show. I'm your host, Patricia Terrell, and we have yet another exciting show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about the open enrollment process, the Affordable Care Act, and we're going to walk you through the process and tell you everything that you need to know about finding the plan that's right for you and more. Now, the call-in number is 1-800-450-7876. So if you have a question regarding the open enrollment process, we'll be definitely happy to answer any questions you may have. I am joined by two dynamic men in the studio, and I will introduce them shortly here. But if you are interested in health coverage under the Affordable Care Act for 2017, you can begin shopping. As a matter of fact, shopping, everything opened up last weekend, so things are already in place. Now, it began last week, and as in previous years, customers are encouraged to shop around. So, let's see, they call it Obamacare, and it has resulted in a rather dramatic drop in the number of Americans forced to go without health insurance. The increase in coverage is particularly beneficial for Hispanic and the African-American populations, who are more likely to be uninsured than the general population. So during today's broadcast, our goal is to help you better understand the open enrollment process so that you can select the best plan for you and your family. And more importantly, we're going to talk about how public policy impacts what plans and benefits are made available. We're going to talk about how many carriers can afford to stick around, why some do and why some chose to not stick around and participate. And we're going to talk about, really, most importantly, the role that each of us can play, the policy levers we as consumers can pull to make the system work better for everyone. And as you know, based on the outcome of this recent election, we will briefly also discuss the future of Obamacare, because there is conversation out there that they're looking to repeal, replace, or do something totally different. So we're going to cover all of this in the scope of an hour. So let me go ahead and introduce my fabulous guests. Joining me is Mr. Benjamin Turner. He's the program director at the Primary Care Coalition. Since 2013, he has been working with teams of navigators, and these are the people that provide enrollment assistance and education on the Affordable Care Act. Benjamin also serves on the board of Consumer Health First, which is a grassroots nonpartisan advocacy organization that promotes consumer interest around healthcare access and quality in Maryland. And also joining me again, Byron Soji Thomas. He is the Deputy Director for Health Policy Research and Analysis at the Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC, and which Make the Change Radio Show is proud to have as one of our sponsors. HPRC's focus is on public policy, how public policy can improve our health, and what each of us can do to drive public policy decisions in our communities. And like I said earlier, based on the outcome of the election, Byron is also going to talk about the important role public policy will play when it comes to the future of the Affordable Care Act and how we, each of us, can make sure our voices are heard when it comes to the writing of that policy. So, Benjamin Turner and Byron Soji Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
Okay, great. So we have a lot to cover in an hour, okay? So let's get started. And we want to make sure that we, first of all, talk about what is the ACA? Let's start with you, Byron.
Yes. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be here. The ACA is the Affordable Care Act. Actually, the full title of the law is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It was enacted in 2010. Right away, there were changes made to the way we provide healthcare in the nation. Some of these changes did not require the spending of any money or the writing of any new tax law. It was changing insurance practices, such as the practices that insurance companies had, for example, of charging women more because they were women, or denying people coverage because they had pre-existing conditions, or spending more on coverage than a particular percentage, giving people caps in terms of how much coverage they could get in a particular year, and those kinds of things. After about a couple years, coverage expansion began, which was the opportunity for more people who did not have health insurance to be able to buy it at a more affordable rate. That's what has caused most of the changes in the way we deliver healthcare in America, and so we look forward to talking more about that.
And so why is this so important to HPRC?
Well, for a number of reasons. First, because the Affordable Care Act has led to, as you mentioned at the opening, a dramatic drop in the amount of Americans who don't have health insurance. So by the most recent count, there have been at least 20 million Americans who now have health insurance who did not have it before the law was enacted. So a lot of these would be people who, before the law was passed, would not have been able to buy care even if they wanted to. Somebody, for example, with a pre-existing condition such as dealing with cancer, and insurance carriers would be afraid to insure them because they'd be too expensive. And so these people would look for coverage and would not be able to find anything affordable. It would include people like Hispanic Americans and African Americans, who tend to be, as you said in the opening, more likely to be uninsured than the general population. A lot of Americans in those categories can now afford to get care. And so that's a lot of people. And so at HPRC, we are concerned about people being able to afford health insurance coverage, because if they can afford coverage, that means they go get care in a timely way. If they can't afford coverage, then typically people in the past would just postpone the care and only show up at the ER or at a hospital or a doctor's office when it's more complex and more expensive to treat. So now you have more people who can afford their health coverage, so it is less likely now that people go bankrupt because of a healthcare bill they can't pay. There's likely a reduction in health disparities, that is the differences that occur between what people in one category can get for care and another category of people can get for, just because they happen to be in the wrong group. And then the amount of ER visits go down because now people can go get care primary care basis. And so now we can free up more cash to spend in another part of the system. And so all of these matter to HPRC because we are concerned about the intersection of public policy, where public policy can help improve the healthcare and the health outcomes of the populations we serve.
Thank you so much for that, Byron. And Benjamin, tell us why the ACA is so important to you and the work that you do at Primary Care Coalition.
Sure. So we've been working in Montgomery and Prince George's counties for years to deliver health care and to improve health for the most vulnerable populations, for those that are cut off from benefits, low-income families. And the Affordable Care Act has been just tremendous opportunity for them, between the expanded access to Medicaid coverage, as well as the premium subsidies, getting people connected to this basic benefit of health insurance increases their access to meaningful health care, like Byron mentioned, and also protects them from a lot of the financial devastation that uncovered health care costs can have on families.
Okay, great. So let's get into the process. Let's talk about open enrollment. What is open enrollment? How long does it last? And why does it occur only once a year? So why don't you go ahead and help us with that, Benjamin?
Sure, I'll dive right in. So open enrollment is the period during which you can purchase health insurance through the state exchanges, which sell the Affordable Care Act plans. So they sell these plans only during this open enrollment period, so that people don't just wait until they're sick. And so that way, if you didn't have the open enrollment periods, more and more people would wait until they had some serious health care costs, then go buy the insurance. So it's just to make sure that they have these stable markets. So it's 3 months a year, November 1st through January 31st, where you can go to healthcare.gov or to your state's website to sign up for coverage. And the only other important date to remember is that the 15th of each month is the deadline for coverage that begins the 1st of the following month. So December 15th is the deadline if you want coverage starting January 1st, and January 15th for February 1st, and so on.
Okay, and so basically, even though you said December 15th is the date for January coverage, are you also saying that we can also enroll after December 5th up to when?
The open enrollment period would end January 31st. So if you miss the January 31st deadline, unless you have some kind of special event in your life, for example, you lose the job that offered you health insurance, or you become pregnant, or a spouse dies, if some major life event happens, you can enroll outside of that window. But if you miss January 31st, you have to wait until November 1st of 2017 in order to purchase coverage.
Okay. And so then if someone enrolls like January 15th, then their coverage would go into effect that February. Is that how that works?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So if you enroll by the 15th of January, you will have February 1st. If you enroll after the 15th, you would remain uninsured until March 1st.
Wow. That's good to know. Okay. So let's go about the process. But before we do that, is there anything else we need to know, like Medicaid enrollment?
Yes. So the Medicaid, which is the program, I'll just differentiate this from Medicare because I know this is an area where it's really easy to get tangled up. So Medicaid is the program that is federal and state governments combined to offer you health coverage based on your income. So for children in Maryland, it goes up to 300% of the federal poverty line, which on my little chart here, sorry. So that would be for a family of four, that would be going up to $72,000. And for adults, it would be 133%. So again, for a family of four, that would be the parents would earning up to $32,000. Can enroll in Medicaid year-round, don't need any special events, can just go and sign up. And if you think you might be eligible, go ahead and sign up for this coverage because there's it's a lot better deal in terms of how much you have to pay for care.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Okay, now the process. But let me go ahead and give out the number again. It's 1-800-450-7876 if you have any questions regarding the process. And we're going to talk about that process now. And Benjamin, we're going to have you walk us through the process. And I believe you have a 7-step process that you want to share with us. So let's go ahead with step number one. What should we do?
All right. So step one is confirm that you don't get offered health insurance through your employer. If you get offered of health insurance through your employer, you're really restricted on what kinds of benefits you can get as long as that coverage is affordable.
Okay. And step number two?
The next step would be to go to the website. So for healthcare.gov is a great place to start. If you live in Maryland, you can go ahead to marylandhealthconnection.gov and in DC, dchealthlink.gov.
All right. And then earlier you talked about Medicaid eligibility. That's your step three. Is there anything else you want to add to that?
No. So I would just say if you are eligible for Medicaid, at the they will tell you at these websites and they will direct you to go ahead and sign up. Depending which state you live in, you might be able to sign up through the state exchange. You might have to go somewhere else.
Okay. And you mentioned state exchange. Is that also the healthcare.gov or is that something else?
I apologize. Yeah. So the healthcare.gov operates the exchange at states that don't run their own exchanges.
Okay. Great. I can see why it gets tricky for sure. It's a lot to this, right? Okay. Yeah. So let's go with your step number four. You said, go ahead and get an estimate. Tell us what you mean.
So the great thing about this, the kind of the way the websites have learned since the first year is that a lot of people want to know how much these plans cost, how much subsidies they're going to get from the federal government, and what their options are before filling out the entire long application. So almost every state has built out an option for this. In the Maryland program, the steps to get there are you have to first click on Enroll Now, and then there'll be a choice to get an estimate. And when you click that, you just tell them how many family members are in your household, their ages, and your overall income, and it will show you all of the plans that are available, what benefits they offer, and what the prices are. So before even going through all of the hassle of creating an application, you can go ahead and have a good idea of what your choices are.
Okay, that's a great thing to do. Get the estimate before you complete the application, basically, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay, great. Now, your fifth step, you said, after you do all of that, you need to go ahead and create an account.
So, and this is, if you worked a lot with online banking or other online tools, this should be pretty familiar where you're creating a username. It has all the different rules for passwords. There are security questions where it asks you to tell them, you know, the name of your first dog or the first person you kissed. So it's going to have all of these extra security questions where you put in the answers. I would advise to make sure you write this down because it's really easy to forget what all of this is. Write it down and put it somewhere safe. So that you don't lose this information because this can create a real headache later on. Every year you're going to have to go back into this system, and so make sure you save this information.
Absolutely, indeed. And so step number six is the actual application for coverage.
That's correct. And this is, again, really familiar if you've done a lot of online work with your taxes or other programs. So this is where you just fill in all of the – it's going to ask you a series of questions, just like an online tax estimator, about each family member – their immigration status, the address, their the income that they've earned in the previous year, what offers of insurance they might get through their employer, all the way through onto the end. It takes a little while, especially if you have a big family, but then at the end of it, it will take you on to step seven, where it actually tells you what you're eligible for, and you choose, and then you start the next big process, which is choosing what to enroll in.
Yeah, and can that decision-making process, like I guess we can call that step number eight, is making a decision, making a commitment. After you get all of this information and go through all of these steps, do you find that that decision-making process is a simple one based on what's provided?
It can be very complicated. So, and I would tell people that, you know, don't feel like you have to do this all in one go-through. It can be overwhelming just getting through the application. But the important part is choosing what plan to be in. And so you don't want to just rush it and pick the whichever plan has the lowest kind of face level price. You really should think about it. And so some of the things that we recommend that you think about is what is important to you about your healthcare access? Is there a doctor that you like to go to? Do you have a medication that you or a family member uses? Write all of that down ahead of time and make sure that the plans line up with what you need.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, I mean, it's very complicated. I have two questions. One is basically you said told people to take their time, maybe do it over a couple of days or so or what have you. But what if they need help? I mean, because we have seniors and we have other people who are not very comfortable with the computer. How can someone get help if they need more handholding?
Sure, and this is something that when the Affordable Care Act was written, they acknowledged that a lot of people were going to need help. And so they created a program called the Connector Programs, is what they're called in Maryland, and Navigators or Assisters, depending on which state. We all get different lingo and jargon depending where you live. Okay. And so these people work with you to help fill out the actual application and explain what these plans are, and then maybe some of the vocabulary around how health insurance works. And so you can find that at healthcare.gov or at MarylandHealthConnection.gov, clicking on where can I get help, and it will tell you where to go. Another great option is brokers or producers is kind of the synonym for that. So these are folks that get paid by the insurance companies for each person they enroll, so they don't charge you. And they're regulated by the state to make sure that they're being fair and offering good advice to people. But they can go a lot. They really study these plans. They have a lot of experience, and they can give you really detailed guidance on which plan makes the most sense for your needs and your family's needs.
And so when you speak about brokers, these are the ones, like, once you go into the system, you're going to start getting all these, I mean, the emails and correspondence from different companies or brokers. Are they the people you're talking about?
No. So the emails that you would be getting from the system would be linked from either the state exchange sending you emails about your account, or once you've signed up, the health insurance company might be sending you emails or physical mail. So there's a lot of different ways you can get information from this. So a broker will be just an independent third-party person or a navigator who you can take these letters to and walk through and get explanations for what it means and what your next step should be, especially if you're still in that choosing a plan process.
Okay. And repeat again, if someone wants to find a broker in Maryland, where would they go?
MarylandHealthConnection.gov. And then you will click on look for help and in-person assistance.
Okay, same with the navigators?
Correct.
Okay.
And I think that now the website pulls up a map based on where you're clicking from and shows you all of these different options. You can click and find someone's phone number and call them up.
Okay. And when it comes to the brokers, do we have to worry about them pushing a plan on us because maybe they are working for a particular insurance company or a lobbyist for a company, or are they really unbiased?
So all of the brokers listed on the website are regulated by the Maryland Insurance Administration. They have to comply with a bunch of regulations to make sure that they're not doing that, that they're giving good, fair guidance.
Okay, great. So still so much to cover. We have some lingo that we want to talk about because, I mean, even when you think about certain lingo like carrier, premium coverage plan, some of them seem pretty obvious, but maybe not so, right? So let's go through them quickly, and we'll just get some good definitions so that when people go through the process, they'll understand what they mean. What is a coverage?
So coverage is that you have health insurance, that a private company is that you have an agreement with them, a contract with them, where they will pay for some of your medical costs.
And what about a premium? What is a premium?
The premium is the monthly amount you pay that company in exchange for them covering some quantity of your health care costs.
Okay. And you mentioned Medicaid again. Give us another brief definition.
All right. Medicaid, and again, differentiating from Medicare, Medicaid is for people based on their income, with higher income levels for kids and pregnant women than for non-pregnant single adults. Medicare is for people over 65 or people with disabilities.
Great. And what is a plan?
A plan is the different choices that the insurance companies offer. So this is the different arrangement of healthcare providers, services, and costs that they put together, all at different price points.
Okay. And what is that deductible?
The deductible is how much the consumer, the patient, you have to pay out of your own pocket before the health insurance company starts covering a bigger portion of the costs. And I would note this does not include the premium. This just covers what you're spending when you go to the doctor.
Okay, so like give us an example. If you have a $500 deductible, what does that mean?
So for example, if you have a $500 deductible and you go to the emergency room, you might owe the first $500 all out of pocket, that you just pay that $500 before then the rest of the insurance kicks in and you then start paying a smaller percentage of the healthcare costs.
Yeah, and some people will choose a higher deductible so they can get a lower premium. And what do you say about that?
So this is something where you really have to think about what makes sense. And this is why I advise that when you finish that kind of sometimes exhausting application, not to just go and pick the cheapest plan, because the plans with the lowest premiums, those can have a $6,000 deductible for a single person, a $12,000 deductible for a household. So these are kind of catastrophic plans that would make a lot of sense if you're a healthy 26-year-old, but might not make sense, you know, if you're a family of four with kids that need immunizations or fall out of trees every now and then, and somebody else managing diabetes. That kind of health coverage might not do you very much good. So you might want to invest in a plan that has a higher monthly premium and bring those deductibles down.
Okay, now my mouth just kind of flew open widely there because you said $6,000 deductible and a $12,000 deductible. Please let us know that those were just examples and maybe not any actuals.
No, there are plans. There are catastrophic plans available. When you look at the plans with the absolute lowest premiums, you'll be seeing $6,000 deductibles on
them. Wow. Okay, that is good to know. So let's talk about a copay. What is a copay?
Sure. So a copay is the flat amount that you pay. So you see this a lot when you go in for, let's just say, a visit to your primary care or family provider, that you pay $15 out of pocket, or there's generic drugs where you pay $10 to pick it up. And then this differentiates from a coinsurance in that a coinsurance is a percentage of the actual costs. And so the coinsurance might be that you pay 15% of chiropractor visits, but you only pay $10 a copay for a primary care visit. And the only other thing I would note is that a lot of the time the copays are available before you reach the deductible. So when you going into that primary care visit, it's $10, whether it's your very first visit or whether it's at the very end of the year. Whereas with the coinsurance, you're paying all of the costs. You're paying 100% up until you hit your deductible. Then it will drop down to the 15%.
Okay, sounds good. So you mentioned out-of-pocket cost and out-of-pocket limit. Tell me the difference between the two.
Yes, so out-of-pocket cost is what it sounds like. It is what you pay out of your pocket. So it's what it's the healthcare costs that the insurance company is not paying for themselves. So this adds up over the course of the year until you hit what's called an out-of-pocket limit. Each plan has that. So a lot of those catastrophic plans I mentioned, they might have a $6,000 deductible, but also a $6,000 out-of-pocket limit. And so that means that you pay everything, every dollar of your healthcare costs until $6,000 and then nothing else.
Okay.
So once you hit that out-of-pocket limit, then the insurance company is expected to pay for all other covered services.
Okay. And what is a provider?
Provider are the doctors, nurses, therapists, anyone that is contracted with your plan.
And the carrier or insurer?
Sure. So these are the companies that are selling the plan. So CareFirst, Kaiser, so on and so on.
And you mentioned broker before, but they're also called producers, I guess. So producer and broker?
Correct. So a producer or broker are third-party private vendors who are contracted by the state, regulated by the state to sell insurance products.
Okay. And what are subsidies?
Subsidies are the federal benefits that are a part of the Affordable Care Act that bring down the cost of those monthly premiums. So they look at your income and they look at the costs of these plans. And then they will set it so that the mid-level benchmark plan wouldn't cost more than, I think, 9.6% of your income each month. So then they will give you a subsidy amount based on your income and that cost of the benchmark plan that you can then apply to any plan in the that's available for sale.
Okay. And I want to talk about that just a little farther, because some people may think, look, I'm just going to go directly to like the CareFirst or the Kaiser and just get my insurance directly from them. And you say, whoa, wait a moment. And that ties into the subsidies. Talk about that.
Correct. Yeah. So if you go straight to CareFirst or Kaiser and call them up, you've been buying your insurance from them for years. Now ACA's happened. You just want to keep on going. That could work okay, but if you would lose all access to these subsidies that bring down the monthly costs. And I think it's important to note that these subsidies go up to a pretty high income level. It's up to 400% of the federal poverty level qualify for some level of subsidy. Obviously, it's a bigger subsidy the lower income you are, but 400% of poverty is about, for a family of four, about $93,000. So that's more than the median income in this region. So most people qualify for some kind of subsidy.
Okay. Is it smart to, if they want to do that, maybe just go ahead and get an estimate from the insurance company directly and then get an estimate from the ACA?
So I would recommend going to the ACA website and going through that browse process I talked earlier, where you get an estimate and see whether, you know, if you're only qualifying for $10 a month of subsidies, maybe it's not worth your time.
Gotcha.
Although over 12 months, $10 a month adds up to over $100. So it's something to think about. And I would say start at the website.
Okay. And it looks like we have a caller. So let me see if I can get the caller to respond to their question. And then we'll continue on the other side. Okay. We only have about a minute or so. Hopefully we can get the question answered. Okay.
Great.
Looks like they hung up. So, okay. Caller, feel free to call back. And let's go ahead. I think we have enough time, maybe 1 minute for probably one more definition. So let's talk about, you mentioned the exchange. Tell us about that. I think we can get through that quickly.
Sure. The exchange is the system where it sells all of these different plans that meet the regulations that Byron talked about earlier and that have the subsidies offered to lower their price. So each state had a choice to either set up their own exchange. Maryland and D.C. chose to do that, or you could just use the federal exchange, healthcare.gov.
Okay. Now, we only have a minute of that. Why don't you give us the website? You have this great website where we can go and learn the lingo. I mean, you have it spelled out clearly there. Tell us what that website is.
Yes, that website is destinationhealth.me. And that is a website that we put together working with partners, the Kaiser Family Foundation, and pulled together definitions for each of these areas and descriptions of how to prepare for a doctor's visit, really writing out what questions you have, what medications, your family history. And we've got this down, I believe, to a fourth grade reading level, because it's really hard to understand this lingo. And then we've translated to Spanish, French, Amharic, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese.
Wow, that's great. Now, we have one other area of the lingo to get in into, and that's the PPO, the HMO, and all of that good stuff. But we're going to bring it back on the other side, because that's going to take some time. So listen, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to talk about the Affordable Care Act, the open enrollment process, walking you through the process, helping you understand the lingo. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
If you live in Prince George's County, Maryland, listen up for this important announcement about how you can gain access to resources that can improve your health. The Health Policy Research Consortium, also known as HPRC, has a mobile app called Health Connect Prince George's that can help you find local resources such as farmers markets, parks and hike trails, recreation centers, community health centers, hospitals,
pharmacies, and much more. The Health Connect Prince George's app is available for download on Google Play and the iTunes App Store. You can also visit www.hprc.info. That's www.hprc.info and click the links at the bottom of the page. Download the Health Connect app today to connect you and your community to a healthier tomorrow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of Make the Change Radio Show. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and the open enrollment process. And my wonderful guest, Byron Soji Thomas with the Health Policy Research Consortium, is joining me, as well as Benjamin Turner, who is the program director at the Primary Care Coalition. And let me tell you, we covered a lot the first half regarding the process and lingo, and Benjamin also provided a website. So if you missed the first half, here's where you can go to understand the definitions of the various words. DestinationHealth.me. That's www.destinationhealth.me. So let's go ahead and continue with the PPOs, the HMOs. Tell us, Benjamin, what do they mean? How can we understand what they're talking about?
Sure. So these are the complex terminology that we've come up with to describe how different insurance companies contract with healthcare providers. So I think a lot of people are familiar with HMOs, health maintenance organizations. So this is a structure where it's usually a little bit more closed. There's a set number of providers contracted with the company, usually a smaller number of providers, and you have to get referrals to get specialty care from your primary care provider. So that's in contrast to PPOs, preferred provider organizations, where you have a little bit more openness and you can go directly to a lot more doctors. And so you see, I won't get into too much detail on these different types of networks. I would say that the bigger thing for people to consider when they're looking at plans is how big that network is and which of their providers that they like to go to are included in that network. So the two ways that insurance companies can lower the monthly premium of the plan are either to reduce the benefits, so that will be a higher deductible, fewer healthcare services offered, more out-of-pocket costs expected of you, or they can narrow the network and have fewer providers available. And so it really is a balancing act where you figure out what's important to you and negotiate that with the insurance company when you're choosing which plan to select.
Yes, thank you so much for that. And those terminologies, they can get very complicated. So again, go to destinationhealth.me. And so let me just go ahead and bring policy back into this, and then we're going to get more into the process as well. So Byron Soji Thomas, I know Benjamin mentioned premium costs and things of that nature. And of course, the ACA has been in the news a lot lately about the increase in premiums. I experienced that personally myself. So can you talk to us about the premium increases and what they look like now in the DC and Mid-Atlantic region? What do we need to know?
Well, first of all, the premiums went up largely because there were a lot of people that were expected to become a part of this, who were expected to sign up for plans under the ACA, who did not. Or rather, there were a smaller number of people than were expected to sign up. So therefore, the insurance pool, that is all the people in the universe of people who want insurance, that pool was not as balanced as the insurers had hoped. So they had hoped for a balance between people who have a lot of healthcare needs and people who are pretty healthy. So that balance helps to bring the cost down. But if you have more people in the pool who have needs, then it's more expensive to cover them. So therefore, the health insurers charge more. So that's how the premiums began to go up. And then some of the insurers began to decide that, well, if I stay in this market, I might not make as much money as I thought. So maybe I should leave. Because the health insurers, because they're private corporations, decide which markets they want to play in and which markets they want to stay out of. Some insurers figured it out. some of the insurers were used to playing in specific markets. They were used to their markets. They'd figured out how to make money in it, so they stayed. So as far as the premium increases go, these are not as widespread as they appear. They're sensational because you can talk about them in the news in a way that, you know, helps get attention. But it's not as widespread as they appear, because anytime these premiums go up, the subsidies follow. So that in a lot of these places, when the premium goes up, the subsidy goes up with it. The monthly premium that Ben has been trying to describe for somebody doesn't actually go up. Here in Maryland, for example, when the premium goes up, the subsidy goes up. In some plans, actually, you end up paying less in the premium, like a buck less a month in some of these cases. So it is useful for us to take the time to go a little bit into the weeds about it.
And so this is going to be very important when it comes to now, of course, with the election and hopefully not the full repeal of the ACA. But can you talk about how we could play a role in that whole policy process when this comes up?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, Ben has begun to describe all the differences here. So state by state, the states responded differently. So we responded in Maryland differently from the way Virginia did. And from the way the district did. So each consumer, each person who thinks they might want to buy a plan under the Affordable Care Act needs to consider what's going on in their state. Who was elected? Who's running health care? Which insurers are playing? What are they offering? And once you determine what that is for you and for your community, you can decide, okay, well, is this going to work for us? Or you can decide to go find somebody like Ben and ask them, is this going to work for our community? Is it going to work for me as an individual person? And so then once we start hearing next year what the new administration wants to do, then we'll have a better sense. Because for people who have bought coverage to cover them for calendar year 2017, their plans will be good. Their plans will have the force of law. Once you've bought it, you're going to get the coverage for 2017. Whatever changes the new administration wants to make are not likely to kick in 2017, because there are a lot of things that they would have to unwind to get the changes affected. So I'm sure Ben can add to that.
Okay, go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so I would add to that. So this is something that's really important that we're already seeing with consumers coming in for assistance, that they are starting to panic over the elections. So I would urge that people still get the coverage in 2017. It's not going anywhere.
Okay, great. So we have a caller, John from Washington, D.C. You're on the line. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes. I'd like to know, do the federal government put a limit on how much the plans can go up a year?
Okay. Benjamin, you want to take that?
So the plans, each year they submit requests to their state, the groups that run their state exchanges, saying how much they want to raise their monthly premiums. And that gets debated by the insurance administration, and they send back what they actually will allow the premiums to increase. So sometimes this comes back and the plan says, no, I can't make money doing that, and they leave. But it is a public process that consumers can be a part of and can see what those proposed rate increases were and how their representatives, how their local exchange responded.
Great. Did that answer your question, John?
Yes, I hear what you say about before I call about why they raised the rates and things. But since I retired in 2013, my plan has been going up over $100 a month each year, and about $100. But this year it has topped over $100, and at this rate, you know, I can't afford to have insurance in the next about 20 years from now if it keep on going, and my my retirement is not going up at that rate. You know, I would think that there should be a limit. I mean, that's just too much.
Yeah, and he's right. Up. We have a lot of seniors out there. The cost of living is not increasing. What do you say, Benjamin?
So I think that this is absolutely an area of concern, that plan affordability, especially with rising health care costs. As the cost of health care goes up, the premiums, as long as we rely on an insurance system, premiums are going to go up as well. And so with the new administration and any administration after that, it's that conversation both for the Medicare population buying supplemental insurance as well as the ACA population how do we make sure people are getting quality coverage that's affordable?
And so are you under Medicaid? Would that matter for him?
Yes, Medicare. I just know if I go to the hospital, God forbid, I don't plan to, but do Medicare pay some along with my health benefit and I come out without paying anything?
Benjamin?
So it would really depend on your specific situation and what kind of services you got and what kind of supplemental insurance you had. Medicare does have a deductible. You know, it's not a full payment for everything that you need plan, but then there are other benefits. I would say that
I have United Healthcare, right? And if I go to the hospital, who's going to pay the first big amount? United Healthcare, and should be some left over. My 20% I'm going to have to pay. But will Medicare pick that up?
So I'm sorry. I don't know enough about your situation to be able to answer that.
But he can go to a broker or the navigators. Tell him where he can go to get that.
So I would recommend talking with a broker if you have Medicare plans. Navigators can't help with Medicare work, but brokers can. And then there's often there's dual eligibility for Medicaid and Medicare, where if you've either have a very low level of assets or very low level of income. While you have Medicare, you can get some Medicaid coverage to cover some of that deductible costs.
And he can go to healthcare.gov and click on DC, Washington, D.C. link?
So I would call up the D.C. Health link and ask them and tell them your situation and that you need to find a broker to help you out. They might also direct you to the Department of Social Services in the district if you might be eligible for that dual Medicaid status.
Okay. Thank you for calling, John. We really appreciate you, and I'm sure you will work that out. We'll be praying for you, okay?
Okay. Thanks very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
Okay,
and see, this is so important. So I heard you mention, Benjamin, about where he could go and how he could participate, but I just want to drive it home again, Byron. How can individual patients drive public policy in their area to try to do what they can to make sure that their voices are heard about these premiums and coverage?
Well, as Ben just said, in his particular case, it might be that he's also eligible for Medicaid. And so if he were to go to the D.C. Office of Social Services and talk to D.C. government about his needs, typically policymakers respond to people who are persistent, people who come to them and say, this is my problem. They respond to persistent people. They respond to volume. If more and more people speak up about the same thing, it gets more attention. We've been hearing in the last week or so that the new Congress might be once again, we've heard this before, might once again talk about how to privatize Medicare. We've heard some of that talk. Anybody who is a Medicare beneficiary who is already under Medicare should be paying attention to hear what the discussion sounds like and hear if there's anything there that could jeopardize their own care. If there's anything there that could jeopardize the ability for them to meet their own needs. The key is, first, for people to pay attention to the conversation. Second, figure out what it is that they need. Third, figure out who it is that they should go to.
Their representative or what have you.
The elected representatives, the actual executive people who run these systems, the people who run insurance, the people who run the healthcare providing system, the people who run the public health system. But most importantly, it is the people that they have elected to represent them. They need to know who those people are, and they need to be willing to go to them with their concerns.
Yeah, and I'm sure seniors would get a lot of attention. I would think that would be the case. Benjamin, did you have something you want to add?
So I would just say this is the first time in 8 years that we're going to be debating, that the legislature will be debating health policy again. And they are very responsive to their constituents. So people need to make their preferences heard and pay attention to this debate.
Is there a time of year when this takes place? I mean, how will we know when this conversation is taking place and where?
Well, the conversation is beginning now. Now it's mostly, you know, news reporters asking these newly elected people, what are you going to do? And we're hearing snippets. Once the new Congress is sworn in January, these conversations will begin in earnest. Once the new president is sworn in January, and he begins to pick the people that will run healthcare for the country, these conversations will begin in earnest. But right now, you're beginning to hear some snippets because news media are asking these newly elected people, what are you going to do come January?
Yeah, so pay attention to the media, to the news, right? Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about, we have a lot to cover still, very little time. So, Benjamin, tell us, what can we do to simplify the process? So once we go through all the steps you provided earlier, what can we do to make it more simple and easy?
So the number one thing is to show up at either your appointment or at your computer, make an appointment for yourself, and sit down at your computer to sign up for coverage with all of the documents that you need ready. And so that list for everybody that is in your household, and that is a term of art, that's anybody that is that's in your taxes. When you file your taxes, every single person that's included there, you're going to need all of their identifying documents. If there are any immigrants in your family, you're going to need their immigration documents on hand. You'll want tax info for the 2015 year, kind of all the taxes you did in 2015. If anyone's income has changed since during 2016, grab a couple pay stubs for that person. And then if anyone in your family gets offered health insurance through their work, you're going to need that policy information on hand. So when you sit down at your computer, have all of that with you, ready to fill out the application. And then when you're choosing which plan you want, again, a little bit of preparation and writing things down before you start. I think these are questions we don't ask ourselves enough. What is important to me about my health care?
Yeah.
Is there a doctor I've been seeing for years and I really don't want to lose that relationship with her? Is there someone in my family that's on a prescription that's really specific? They've changed it to a different brand before and it's really messed them up. And so we want to stay on that prescription. Are me and my wife planning to get pregnant in the next year? Having those kinds of conversations, writing it down, really is going to help you understand the choices that you're going to be making.
Okay, and I think we talked earlier about sometimes the reason for the increase is that a lot of people chose not to get insured. So let's talk about these people here because, you know, there are some people who are deciding not to purchase health insurance coverage. Why is that the case? What are the penalties? What do you want to say to them, Byron?
Well, a lot of them are people who are right now healthy. One category. Second category are people who feel like, well, I can't afford this thing every month. I can barely pay the bills that I have now. So I'm going to skip it. Some of them are people who are just afraid because they don't have enough information and they feel like this is too complicated and I want to stay away from it. Some might just have philosophical or religious or political aversion to becoming involved. So there are a variety of categories and a variety of reasons why people stay away. But the way the program was designed was, at the time when it was being passed in 2010, the count was somewhere between 40 and 50 million Americans were uninsured. We've now cut that in about half in about 3 or 4 years. And so there's been a dramatic increase. And so the Affordable Care Act has made gains that many people don't know about. And so many people are not aware that it's actually worked very well for most of the people who have signed
but
up.
But let's talk about the risk factor. Surely they can't afford maybe the premiums, but if they get hurt or they need care, they have an accident, that's a huge individual risk factor. What do you want to say about that, Byron?
Well, the risks will vary. I mean, the risks will vary. If you got some kind of a plan like Ben was describing, catastrophic plans, where you bought a plan because you wanted to keep the premium really low so that it would fit into your budget, but because the premium is low, the deductible
is high.
No,
I mean those who are not even getting insurance. They may be saving money, but
yes,
then they're going to be at risk if they have an accident and then now no coverage.
Exactly.
You want to speak to that, Benjamin?
Yeah, sure. So we know that before the ACA and even going on now, the number one reason for personal bankruptcy is medical debt. Healthcare costs are expensive. And I think that what we don't realize is that the bills that we get when you're insured, even after they mark off what the insurance company is paying, that's a negotiated rate. If you're going in there by yourself, you don't have the insurance company negotiating down the costs of healthcare. A broken ankle could cost $10,000. Getting an infection, and then you know you let it linger because you're busy, and then all of a sudden you're hospitalized because you're dehydrated and have to spend 2 nights there. That could be well over $20,000. So these are things that happen. They are hard to predict, and that's outside of any kind of managed chronic condition that just happened to people that are healthy right now. And so having health insurance, it is an additional monthly cost, but it provides you that financial security to avoid what can be catastrophic medical debt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a very important point, Ben. And so, you know, even the hospitals prefer people walking in with insurance, because it means that for the situation that Ben described, where somebody walked in and was uninsured, and this is a surprise bill, and it's big. So now the hospital has to come chase you using collections. They're thinking, if I chase you with collections, I may get 30 cents on the dollar back. Well, when it's time for the hospital to do their books, they're like, okay, well, I can't eat all this cost. So they'll just spread it around to the rest of us who are insured.
Yeah, higher premiums, right?
Premiums.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the tax penalties, Benjamin.
Sure. So, and this I'll start off by saying this tax penalty isn't just put in place because as a punitive measure. It's also to avoid people not getting coverage for the exact reasons we described. It's really important to have coverage. And with that guaranteed issue of coverage that's a part of the Affordable Care Act, that the insurance companies can't deny you benefits, there has to be a way to make sure people don't just wait until they're sick. And because that would mean only sick people got insurance and bring the prices up, and it spirals out of control that way. And so this penalty, if you don't have insurance, now it's just like auto insurance. You have to be insured. And there is a penalty if you're not. And it's been going up every year. So for those of you who were uninsured last year and paid the penalty, you're going to be surprised by a larger penalty when you do your taxes in January. It's now up to either 2.5% of your income or $700 per uninsured adult. I think about half that for uninsured kids. So you add that together, or whichever is greater, either that 2.5% or $700 per adult.
Is there a cap on that?
There's a cap of $2,000.
Okay.
So, but that, you know, a lot of people do their taxes as soon as they get their W-9. I'm one of those people that in January, as soon as I get my paperwork, I'm doing my taxes to pay off all my Christmas shopping.
Right.
And so if you're relying on that money and then you have an unexpected knockout, it can be another real hit for people. And so I would urge people that buying the insurance, not only does it protect you from these devastating financial costs, it helps you avoid tax penalties. And then finally, what we haven't mentioned is it gives you access to all of these important health services that the ACA, even those really high deductible plans we talked about, preventive services are free. Family planning is free. You can get cancer screenings that meet your age guidelines. All of that's really important services to have. And rather than panic over the election and worry about whether or not the law will be around, I think what's really important is to make sure you're getting all of these benefits right now, and that you're getting your family all of the health care services that they need.
Absolutely. So we only have about 4 minutes, so let's go ahead. There's one area that I want us to talk about, then I want each of you to take about 30 seconds to wrap it up and let our listeners know what you really want them to do after this show. Now, Benjamin, let's go to you. Let's talk about how do we navigate through the multiple companies that will contact us after we enroll via healthcare.gov. And one thing you said, look, already have your doctor picked out.
Yeah, so I would say that make sure you know what decisions you're making when you're going onto the website before you start. Don't just improvise. And so that you know what you're choosing when you're on the website. You're going to get some letters in the mail. You're going to get letters from the exchange, from the company where you signed up for the coverage. And you'll get letters from the insurance companies. If you signed up for private coverage for the parents and then Medicaid for the kids, you'll get different sets of letters. So I think that just, again, organizing all of this and figuring out exactly what they mean. If you can't understand what they mean, I would recommend contacting a broker and sitting down and walking through these letters together.
Yeah, and you mentioned know your doctor and also which network your doctor is affiliated with.
Yeah, so I would say before you choose a plan, if you do have that doctor that you've been going to for years that you want to stay with and you're about to shop for new health coverage, call up your doctor. Okay. Ask them which plans they participate in. They know.
Yes.
They know better than anybody else.
Absolutely. And there's a database because I know that they'll ask you at healthcare.gov or the brokers and they'll let you know. Which
so each exchange network. Has been working on updating their listed networks of which providers participate with which plans. But I would recommend if it's a really relationship that's important to you, that you call your doctor and confirm, because, you know, there's always a lag time in keeping those updated.
Gotcha.
Whereas the doctor will have the most up-to-date information.
Okay. We have about 2 minutes. So why don't we wrap it up? And Byron, Soji Thomas, I'm going to start with you and let our listeners know what it is that you want them to do. What's the most important thing you want them to do after this show?
Well, if you don't have healthcare coverage and you've been thinking that you need to do it, just do everything Ben said. We are very interested at the Health Policy Research Consortium in helping to make sure that people have enough information to drive their own health outcomes. And we want to make sure that they understand which policy levers they can push, which buttons they can push to make sure that they're able to impact what policymakers know about their situations and what policymakers do to make them healthier. So just do everything Ben said.
Okay, Ben. what do you want our listeners to know?
So I would add to that a couple of things. So first, if you currently have coverage to the exchange, please do make sure to go onto the website, log into your account. If you need to retrieve your passwords, don't wait until the last minute. Go ahead and do it now and check with your plan to make sure that the benefits aren't changing, if the premium's changing, that still makes sense for you. And then otherwise, I would just say don't be overwhelmed by this. Don't be panicked. Be prepared. Mm-hmm. Do a little bit of prep work. Think through what you need. We really want to make sure that as many people as possible get the coverage and benefits that they're eligible for.
Okay, yeah, plan it over a few days. Go ahead, Byron. I'll give you the final word.
Yeah, so we've said a lot here. And so if you would like to follow up, find us online, hprc.info, hprc.info. And we can connect you to all the resources that you need. You can follow us online. When you go to hprc.info, you'll see all the social media platforms that we participate in. So thanks for listening.
Okay. Thank you, Benjamin. Did you want to provide information as well?
I'll plug our website again.
Okay.
Destinationhealth.me. That's destinationhealth, all one word, .me. And that's where you can get all of the information I talked about with the different lingo. And there are some videos on there and different documents you can print out to record your history. All really great stuff to prepare for visits.
Okay. Byron Soji Thomas, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Benjamin Turner, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thanks so much. This was fun.
That's right. You've given us a lot of information, and I do hope that our listeners out there, thank you, John, for calling in, that you'll be able to use this information. I will upload the show by tomorrow so that you can go step by step by everything that Ben had to say. So be sure to tune in next Saturday for more lively discussions about how you can make positive changes in your life.
Remember to tune in to Make the Change every Saturday from 12 noon p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also visit with Patricia at www.patriciaterrell.com for links to social media, email, and blogs. Thank you for listening today, and remember that changing the world starts with changing you.